Life at the Movies.
Tonight's cinematic buffet from Chef CJ Johnson contains two options for you. They are Boys in the Trees, served raw, and Masterminds, served well done. Hello, CJ.
Hi. I'm trying to think of a brilliant metaphor, a brilliant simile related to food. I can't, but well, one of these I might have to do a bit of a hatchet job, maybe make a bit of a hash of.
Hey, there we go. A hash brown out of one of them. So look, let's start with Boys in the Trees. Mm. I don't know much about either of these two films, so that means I have no preconceptions.
Well, that's interesting, yeah. Boys in the Trees is an interesting Australian film from a very interesting Australian filmmaker that will almost certainly have a future, despite the fact that I don't think anyone is going to see this film.
So often the fate of an Australian film.
Oh, I know, but this one in particular, and I'll let you know why, because it is not necessarily meaningful of the film not being good, but it is a very, 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 very unique flavour. There we go, with a food metaphor. His name is Nicholas Verso, and he's come to make his first feature film the pretty traditional way, which is through shorts. He's made three very acclaimed short films that have done the festival circuit and won awards and done all that. So, which is the sort of the traditional way, rather than the make it on an iPhone and get it 10 million views crowdfund it. This is kind of the traditional way. And along the way, he's picked up a producer, and that producer has seen, well, this young man should be an Australian filmmaker and has made raised the funds for him to make this contained short first film that he's basically been allowed to really allow his own voice to come to the fore, which is both the film's strength and also its massive Achilles heel, because it is such an original and unique and esoteric and personal and unclassifiable film that I think it'll be very, very difficult for it to be accessible to anyone outside of real seekers of out there entertainment.
Okay.
So it's Halloween in the late 1990s in suburban Australia.
I remember it well.
And it's the last day of high school. Well, see, this is interesting. See, this could be your film.
Well, that was me. Mid-1994, there I was finishing high school.
I think this one is set in 97, which I think
in
is the year of Nicholas Verso's final year of high school.
Okay.
Which among certain schools, I guess, is known as muck-up day.
Oh, yes.
Right. And so it's muck-up day. So the kids have all mucked up. And now that the boys have finished mucking up, a small group of them, small group of boys, a bit of a little gang, are going to go out trick-or-treating, which I didn't know anyone did in Australia in the 90s, but I guess people did. Okay.
We did. Yeah, no, people are surprised to hear it. And just mentioning Halloween on the radio, I've found, unleashes a wave of texts and calls and so on.
How dare you bring out an
American
thing.
Tradition.
Look, it's not.
I did it. I was a teenager. I did it from about 1989 on. So sorry, it's here.
Oh, yeah.
No,
it's totally
debate entered into.
And also it's got its origins in all sorts of different
things. It's Scottish. It's all Hallows Eve.
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly. But I guess there is this Americanization of it, which is the element of trick-or-treating. And anyway, that's what these boys are ostensibly going to do. And the fact that you're already nodding and saying, yes, yes, I did this, means that there is an audience, obviously, for this film.
Just
it's
me.
Yeah, it's you or people of you and Nicholas Verso's sort of origin story.
Yeah, people pushing 40. If you're pushing 40, grew up in the burbs of Australia and went trick-or-treating, you'll relate to this. But, you know, you don't have to have had the experience to relate to a story, I guess. But you're going to explain shortly, I imagine, why it's a little challenging.
Well, it's because it crosses so many genres. So this group of boys are going out trick-or-treating, and they're doing it by grabbing spooky masks and their skateboards. So we've already got some. This is where some of the interesting aesthetic comes
in. They're American too, those skateboards.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. They're probably Scottish too.
Oh.
Well, they are American, aren't they? Because they were developed by surfers on the West Coast when they couldn't surf. There you go. Dogtown and Z-Boys reference. So they grab their skateboards, spooky masks, and they're going out for a night of trick-or-treating with this slightly creepy edge of the fact that they are all essentially young adults. You know, they're 17 or 18-year-old boys, so you don't want them tricking you.
No, that is too. Can I just say that is too old to be trick or treating?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Anyway,
yeah. So they bump into this kid that's an outsider and not in a cool way. You know, one of the kids that gets bullied by the kinds of boys that these are, and then they get separated from one of themselves, and so the outsider and one of the in group find themselves walking along the suburban streets at night on trick or treating night on Halloween night, and essentially telling each other ghost stories while bonding and while reckoning with their past and reckoning with forgiveness and saying goodbye to their youth.
Yeah.
So what it really is, if it is any one thing, is it's a coming-of-age story, which Australia has probably done more of than any other particular genre. And as a coming-of-age story, it is not particularly vibrant or exciting in any way. There's nothing new within the coming-of-age story. You're watching two boys bond, especially over an incident that happened to them both a few years ago that both of them have chosen to either forget or deny or remember in different ways. We've seen that a million times. What is very interesting about the film is that they tell each other stories relating to Halloween and the idea of being spooky and being creepy. And so every now and then, and quite often, the film explodes into this fantasia of amazing imagery involving those things that we associate with creepy ideas like Halloween. So there are werewolves and spooky masks and witches and ghosts and all that sort of stuff. But it is not a horror film. The materials for the film make it look like a horror film, but it's not.
I thought we were going to get metaphysical and there were going to be demons and it was going to get thrillery.
No, it doesn't get thrillery at all. It's more like a fairy tale, but with a coming of age twist.
So is there suspense?
Not really.
Is there tension? Is there
drama? Well, that's the trouble.
Drama?
That's the trouble. There's not really any of those things. It is much more of an art film. It is almost experimental in its sort of mix of things, and it is there much more to be experienced in a way rather than to be followed with any great depth. And that's a shame because half of it is this amazing imagery that really looks quite spectacular and is creepy and fun in the way that sort of that werewolf movie In the Company of Wolves was. But half of it is very uninspired, traditional shots of teenage boys talking to each other. And those sequences are very dull. And the actors don't help. They're not very experienced actors and they're not very good, with the exception of the big bully, who was always the best because he's always got the best role. So that's half the film. And unfortunately, the film is much too long. It feels long. I think it's close to 2 hours and it feels over 2 hours. And if only it had a bit more discipline applied to it and those boring sequences, frankly, had been cut down and we'd been left with the imagistic stuff as the bulk of the film, I think it could have been a really, really distinct film. It's almost like it needs another edit and needs to come out again and be better.
So maybe the vision was somewhat compromised to make it relatable and thereby stuck in between the two extremes. So do we still put this director down in the one to watch for the future?
Possibly. We'll definitely put Verso down, Nicholas Verso, as one to watch in the future because he's obviously got a voice and a vision. I mean, who thought to combine the American Halloween aesthetic to Adelaide streets and skateboard culture and Dinosaur Jr.? The soundtrack is excellent. Yeah, exactly. The soundtrack is fantastic. It's all full of these late 90s stuff, really well used. I know that he begged, borrowed, and steeled. He wrote Marilyn Manson a personal letter to get the rights to use a Marilyn Manson song, Beautiful People.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's clever, but it is way too clever by half for most people. I mean, you've really got to be an adventurer into cinema to sort of go seek it out, I'm afraid.
Okay, so that's CJ Johnson. No qualified interest, not entirely a fan of Boys in the Trees. Now, how about Masterminds? This, I think, is an attempt at comedy, is it not?
An attempt. An attempt at comedy.
I suspected this was going to be the one you didn't like.
Yeah, yeah. This is the one where we can apply the hatchet job. We should slice and dice it. We should serve it raw. whatever food metaphors you want to make. Okay, there is a subgenre of comedy which are films based on true stories about incompetent bands of people joining together to try and achieve crime. You know what I mean? So idiots failing at crime and films based on their idiocy and kind of making fun of them. Now, a really good example of this, surprisingly, because his other films are all terrible, Michael Bay made a film in 2013 called Pain and Gain with Mark Wahlberg and The Rock,
I saw the
Dwayne
trailer
Johnson.
For that.
It's really good.
Okay, I should go watch that because I love The Rock.
Oh, my God. It's his best role ever because he's playing an idiot.
He gives very good idiot, actually.
He's playing cool. He's playing his biggest idiot. And so he and Mark Wahlberg in that film play bodybuilders who meet, like, through bodybuilding networks.
Michael Bay. All right, so we've got a good film out of this conversation, CJ, but it ain't this one.
No. So that's about idiots trying to do crime and it all going horribly wrong. And it's funny. And part of the reason that film really works is it does feel just believable despite the idiotic shenanigans on screen. And also two-thirds of the way through, at one particular moment when they're doing something particularly just crazy and stupid, it pauses and up on the screen, text appears saying, "This is still a true story." And we're like, that's right. We're watching a true story. And so it's funnier. Whereas this film, Masterminds, it's also the story, a true story, also set in the late 90s, as Pain and Gain was, as Boys of the Trees is, of idiots that came together to pull off an armored truck heist. And it doesn't adhere to the facts as much. The director, Jared Hess, has admitted so much. He's admitted that he has strayed a little further than a lot of movies of this type. And so the moment you first start sniffing that and thinking like, oh, okay, this is really not going to be that true, a true story.
You cut a lot of slack, don't you, to something that you think is true?
Yeah, because then you can go like, oh my God, you get those, oh my God, that they're such idiots laughs. But the moment you feel like the screenwriter invented it rather than got it from the truth, then you're just seeing a bad joke. And this film is full of bad jokes. Jared Hess made Napoleon Dynamite, and that was a very stylized and very effective film. But it was colorful, it was cartoony. And this film is colorful and cartoony. And once again, when you're telling a true story, but you've made it all look like a cartoon, and it's not funny, then it's not really working. Zach Galifianakis is in it. Zach Galifianakis has become very odd because he made this series called Baskets last year, which was about a French-trained clown who has to be a rodeo clown. And obviously it's a metaphor for the fact that he does this amazing alternative comedy, but Hollywood is making him do Hollywood comedy. And at this point, when I'm watching him in a Hollywood comedy, which this is, I don't know whether he is, you know, taking the mickey.
I don't know what
levels he's working on, but he's working on his own crazy level and he's decided to push the empathy card. So every film I've seen him in outside of the Hangover series, and in fact, including the Hangover series to a degree, he's so desperate to be liked that I don't know whether he's making fun of the fact that comedians are desperate to be liked or whether he's just desperate to be liked.
That's a very good point, because in Between Two Ferns, the web series that which Hillary Clinton was on recently,
he is not desperate
to be liked. He's horrible. No, and he's horrible. That works really well. Why isn't that character being used? That's a great character. Interesting.
I know. And that's, I think, his point in this television series, Baskets, which you should check out, you know, because it is about a comedian who's having to do rodeo comedy, literally the clown in a rodeo.
Sounds great.
But he's trained at, like, Lecoq.
He's in this other film, isn't he? The film about the spies next door.
He is. He's in the film about the spies next door called, I think it's called Keeping Up with the Joneses. The trouble is, those two posters are next to each other in cinemas at the moment. And they're both four-face posters. They're both, like, Zach Galifianakis and Owen Wilson / John Hamm, and then two women. And so you could really confuse them. You could really go into the wrong movie. Don't go into this one. It's not good. Owen Wilson is normally good. Kristen Wiig is normally good.
She's normally excellent.
Yep. They're both bad in this film, man, because they're overdirected.
They're all doing
slapstick. The humor is often really in the gutter and not in a funny way, just in a bad way. Like, they tried to make sure that there were jokes in there that would titillate 9-year-old boys. But what 9-year-old boy is interested in the comic stylings of Kristen Wiig and Zach Galifianakis? You know what
None.
I mean?
No.
None. The best person in it, I'll tell you what, there was one person in it and I was like, who is that? Someone here is doing this incredible, strange, intriguing comedic work. And at first I thought it was Elizabeth Banks under a lot of makeup. Huh. And then at the end, I stayed for the credits and it was this woman named Kate McKinnon.
Oh my goodness.
She is amazing.
She's the best.
She's
the funniest woman in Hollywood right now. She's Hillary Clinton in SNL's debate parody.
Well, bring on her as the star of her own movies.
Yeah, yeah.
She's amazing.
Well, she was the best thing in Ghostbusters as well. So she is the
She's the only thing in this worth seeing. I'm a McKinnon fan. She's great in this.
Oh, well, it's terrible when a Hollywood comedy tries really hard, overshoots
the mark. It tries so hard.
Just fails. It's like a... Oh, it's like, you know, a dog that's got to be put down.
Like, if there's a foot chase in this movie where someone falls off the end of a pier into the water, and there is, there will also be someone behind them stumbling over because there's a banana skin on a roller skate. I mean, not literally, but that's what it is. They are trying too hard.
CJ, thank you so much for seeing that film so we don't have to.
You're welcome.
Still makers of McKinnon. CJ Avoid Johnson it. Here on a Tuesday night, of course, or you can catch his podcast. It's called Movie Land.